Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, December 18th, 2015, and on today's podcast, we're going to discuss the climate change agreement negotiated recently in Paris and signed by President Obama. This is not a discussion of whether human activity causes destructive changes in the Earth's climate or not. It is just a discussion of the agreement which President Obama has been trying to get through since he took office. The agreement, which is supposed to hold off the climate disaster that would otherwise destroy the entire planet and everyone on it. The administration is happy with the agreement, but not many others seem to be. I suppose the third world countries that are to receive hundreds of billions of dollars from U.S. taxpayers to help them do something that isn't exactly clear what, I suppose they're happy. The people opposed to the deal are unhappy because it will cost the United States an undetermined amount of money in direct payments to other countries, shut down U.S. industries, cost American workers their jobs. Senator James Inhofe, Oklahoma Republican and chairman of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, said the agreement would be as ineffective on climate change as the Kyoto Protocol signed 18 years ago. Quote, "What is significant for the United States is that we can expect the administration to cite this agreement as their excuse for establishing emission targets for every sector of the U.S. economy, not only including utilities, but petroleum, refining, all manufacturing, agriculture, and others," end quote. Senator John Hovind, North Dakota Republican on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, called it more of the president's big regulation approach. He's trying to regulate the world's approach to energy, Senator Hovind said. He might be onto something there. The federal government already controls so much of the economy. Why not energy as well? Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Kentucky Republican, said, quote, "Mr. Obama is making promises he can't keep," end quote. He further pointed out to the president that the agreement is subject to, quote, "being shredded in 13 months. By that, he means that the presidential election next year, the agreement could be reversed if a Republican is elected. That's why this, quote, agreement is not referred to as a treaty. Treaties have to be submitted to the U.S. Senate and be ratified by a two-thirds vote. There is no way in the world this Senate would even pass this agreement, let alone ratify it as a treaty. So President Obama will not submit it to the Senate. He will instead try to implement it by executive order and by regulation and strong-arming industries to, quote, voluntarily comply. That's why the other side of these negotiations, the side which does believe that human activity causes potentially catastrophic changes in the Earth's climate, doesn't particularly like the agreement. The way they see it, humanity has a slim chance of surviving annihilation anyway, even if we had an agreement that was binding and enforceable against every nation on Earth, which is what they want. Such a deal with legal requirements for countries' emissions at specific levels and in specific ways would have had to go by the United States Senate for ratification, and therein lies the rub. The New York Times believes that human-caused climate change is, quote, established science, and those Neanderthal Republicans who don't accept it just want to thwart Obama's landmark accord. Even our betters at the New York Times, though, understand that philosophy must sometimes give way to reality, so they sign off on an agreement that has no enforcement mechanism. It is not enforceable, since we can't force anyone to do anything. Even John Kerry admitted this. Quote, "This is a deal that means nothing, because no one will put sanctions on anyone to do anything," end quote. Some people talk in terms of words like shall, as opposed to words like should. Shall, they say, makes it enforceable. But that seems like nonsense, doesn't it? Shall is used in two notable places, though. It is used regarding contributions to third world nations to help them comply, and it is used for the requirement of the nations to report their own progress every 5 years. The real enforcement, Mr. Kerry says, is through embarrassment or shaming those who don't comply or who lag behind in their compliance. There must be two groups who are extremely happy about the agreement who have been laughing since it was signed. The first group is the Third World, who will receive hundreds of billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars, money for doing nothing. The second group is China and Russia, who have absolutely no intention of complying with the agreement and who get to watch while the American economy is damaged even further. More jobs are exported. Why, then, would every nation on earth sign this agreement? Because it is non-enforceable to them. It puts the onus on the United States to pay for it, so they take the money. One interesting aspect of all this is that if the agreement were completely complied with by everyone, by every nation on earth, by the end of this century, or 85 years from now, the atmospheric temperature would be reduced by an estimated 0.048 degrees centigrade, or less than one-half of 1/100th of 1 degree. No, this is a process that is designed to shift us away from oil and coal and to pour hundreds of billions of dollars into, quote, clean energy, which usually works out to be a way for our betters to reward their friends and their political contributors. You give me the money now for my campaign when I'm elected, I'll make sure you get it back. Oil and coal mean jobs, and they mean freedom, since they allow us to travel, to heat our homes rather cheaply, and to have work. We have some degree of security and independence with coal and oil. The Paris Agreement is just one part of a much larger, much longer process. Some of the other aspects of this process are now in fruition, and others are still making their way along the continuum toward the ultimate goal, which is global government. There is a strategy to building a global government. It doesn't happen all at once. This strategy has a dynamic, interactive quality to it. It allows for constant adjustment of ends and means as things in the world change. New possibilities open up and others are closed off. The elite have had this strategy for centuries, and they have worked tirelessly to implement it by the destruction of national sovereignty, one part at a time. Other things I will mention later. Now, finally, the time is right for this strategy. The final nails are now being driven in the coffin. It is obvious now, even to the casual observer of these events, that the global government will be socialist, and it will be feudal. That is the first leg of the stool, i.e. the destruction of the middle class in America. And since 2006, it has declined from 71% of American workers to about 50% today. Notice I said workers, since the other 50% of us receive some type of government assistance. So we'll have a class of extremely rich elite running the world plantation. The vast majority of us will be ignorant, propagandized, barely educated workers, totally dependent on their betters. They will have no sense of unity, no unity of religion, of race, of nationality, even gender. Their health care is controlled by the elite who literally decide who lives and who dies. The economy of the global government will be a cashless one, of course. The government watching and controlling every single transaction, every ignorant, barely literate prole monitored and watched from cradle to grave. Only the elite are entitled to live long lives, you see. Finally, folks, is that a picture of the lives you want for your children and grandchildren? If not, then I suggest that you resist each step in the process. Learn to recognize these steps and resist them as you encounter them. At least that's the way I see it, folks. Now, next Friday is Christmas, so no podcast then. But Merry Christmas. That's the good news today. Who said there's no such thing as good news? I'll talk to you again then on New Year's Eve, the last day of this year, December 31st, 2015, God willing. Till next time, folks, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.